In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And thank you for joining us today on the iSpy Radio Show. We are keeping an eye on big government. We're proud to be Oregon's second largest radio network on four stations in three out of four corners of Oregon and anywhere in the world, thanks to our broadcasters' live streaming. You know, a few centuries before the birth of Christ, Sun Tzu said that all warfare is based on deception. That means keeping your enemy off guard, treating them like a friend while plotting their demise. Keep that in mind during today's show. Why? Because seemingly almost without notice, China is quietly waging a war on the U.S. Perhaps taking a page from the Soviet Union era's failed communist takeover, China is waging war against the U.S. not with nuclear weapons, but through economic and cultural warfare. This Chinese invasion is taking many forms. Some months ago, we brought your attention to the economic warfare China is waging and has been waging against the U.S. Their silent warfare has intensified. This week, we take a deeper look at the threat no one seems to be paying attention to, at least seemingly no one in the Obama administration. Why exactly are they opening the door to our enemies? We'll start by talking to James Herson of Headline Hollywood about the Chinese invasion of Hollywood. Why are Hollywood elites, the uber-liberals of liberals, who famously decry any sort of censorship, getting into bed with Chinese investors? And what are the Chinese hoping to get out of this strange marriage? And then we'll talk with Kevin Freeman, who is one of the world's leading authorities on financial and economic warfare. We'll talk with him about China's silent war with the U.S., a cyber war, not nuclear weapons, but computers and hacking and cyber weapons that can be as every bit as destructive as nuclear ones. One former NSA director said the Chinese have already hacked into every major U.S. corporation. So what do you think they've done to Hillary's private email server? We'll be sure to ask Kevin about that and the security risk posed by Hillary's recklessness in her thirst for secrecy and power. What exactly did she expose us all to? Right now, though, I'd like to welcome James Herson to the show. He's the author of the book Tales from the Left Coast, and just like iSpy keeps an eye on big government, James keeps an eye on Hollywood. James, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Great to be with you, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing exceptionally well. You have a great article out there titled China Goes to Hollywood, in which you discuss a huge amount of cash flowing into Hollywood from China to some very high-profile entertainment companies, which not only want to get the cash from these Chinese investors, but also with the hopes of expanding access to the Chinese market. However, you discuss some of the problems there with this China-Hollywood connection. What's interesting, though, is California itself has a very unfriendly business environment due to the high tax structures, high cost of living, and so on. And even the film industry is often unfriendly to doing business, since you've got to deal with multiple unions. And at the same time, these film budgets are just ballooning. So I guess it's not surprising some of these media companies are looking for financing practically from anywhere they can get it. But what's unique about the Chinese connection?
Well, there's been a long history of Hollywood looking for money. It's a very high-risk business. Some people have analogized it to drilling for oil because of the fact that you don't get a gusher in every drill. And so Hollywood has taken money from various parts of the world, from hedge funds, anywhere they can get it. And that part of it is not a concern at all. What is happening in Hollywood is totally unprecedented. There are a host of executives from major studios who have left the major studios, started their own companies, and partnered. And the key word is partnering. Mm. Partnered with a Chinese entity. In some cases, the entities are upfront that they are owned by the government of China. In other cases, they are supposedly owned by individuals, publicly traded companies, but everybody knows that the Chinese government exercises a huge amount of control, different than anything we understand in the West.
Oh, yeah.
And you mentioned something very important. You said the words access to their markets, access to the Chinese markets. The reason it's not, the word access is different than access to the market of Germany or Mexico even, or any other part of the world. Number one, China's the fastest growing film market in the world. It's growing at a rate of 40% a year. It is the second largest film market in the world next to the United States. And it is a repressive government currently cracking down on dissenters, cracking down on religious institutions. And I say cracking down, arresting.
Yeah.
And this is a government that censors. This is a government that imposes protectionist quotas on entertainment, allowing only a certain number of foreign films per year, and a blackout period during the summer when companies make their money. China has a 6 weeks or so blackout period where only Chinese films are available at the Chinese multiplexes in order to promote what has been in the past horrible filmmaking. You know, they were shocked that people didn't want to flock to see the teenage years of Mao Zedong, you know, things like that. But to give an idea of the kind of relationships that are being encouraged, really, in Hollywood, and I don't, you know, it's almost impossible to avoid the temptation when you have these companies that are strapped with cash running around offering these deals. Southpaw, a film just came out last weekend with Jake Gyllenhaal, highly, highly critically acclaimed, already having Oscar buzz, was financed. The production part of that film 100% came from a company called Wanda Pictures. Wanda Pictures is controlled by Wang Jianlin, the wealthiest man in China, worth tens of billions of dollars. Wanda Pictures also is the second largest theater chain owner in the United States. They own AMC Theaters. They could easily become, in very short order, the most powerful entertainment company in Hollywood. They have purchased a large piece of land in Beverly Hills, are constructing an entertainment complex. And this was done, Southpaw was done with the Weinstein Company, and every step of the filmmaking, the development of the script, the pre-production, the principal photography, as it's called, on-location production, the post-production, the editing, the marketing, everything, the Chinese company Wanda had people there learning.
Hmm.
And their goal is, this is why Hollywood, you know, Hollywood's a short-sighted town. What China wants to do is partner up and then dispense with their partners and do it themselves. And why should we be concerned? Because they've already altered content.
Hmm.
They've already altered what writers will write, what actors will speak. Now, it hasn't been, you know, like, for example, no one's going to be able to partner up with China making a documentary about Tibet.
No.
And Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which just came out, was financed by another huge group, the Alibaba Group, that had the largest IPO in history recently, and Jack Ma, who's the second richest individual at the moment in China. You know, they fluctuate. But you can be sure that the Rogue Nation and Mission Impossible Rogue Nation is not China.
No, no,
because
absolutely
you can't
not.
Make a film with Chinese villains. You can't make a film that criticized China. You can't make a film with anything in there that the Chinese government officials don't like, or it will be a band.
You know, and it's shocking that these liberal media types that are all about free speech would get in bed with this. Unfortunately, we are up against a break here. We will ask James that when we come back. Stay with us. And welcome back. On today's iSpy Radio Show, we're talking about the growing Chinese influence in America, if not outright invasion. Later, we'll be talking about the ongoing Chinese cyber attacks on the U.S. government as well as on some major corporations, so stay tuned for that. Right now, though, we are talking with James Hurston of Headline Hollywood about the growing influence of China in the U.S. film industry and Hollywood.
And, you know, going into the break there, I'm just shocked that these liberal media types that are all about free speech are getting in bed with these Chinese investors. I mean, you talked about how the Chinese government is cracking down on dissidents and jailing them, and here is Hollywood essentially supporting them. So why would they be doing this?
Well, you know, and you brought that up because it was the Weinstein Company partnering up with Wanda Pictures, owned by the... By the way, this guy, I want to mention this. The guy that owns Wanda Pictures, Wan Jianlin, he's not your typical film mogul. He spent 16 years in the People's Liberation Army.
Yes.
Where he rose in rank. So the question is, you know, how loyal is he to the Chinese government? Very loyal. They made him a billionaire. So Harvey Weinstein, known for being a prominent liberal, supporting liberal candidates, yes, you would think he would support free speech, but there are two factors in play. The first, of course, is the money, and the money is huge, and that's a factor. But the second is the thinking of the left, where, you know, we expect cogent, logical thinking from intelligent people, and they show again and again that they are not logical, and they are not cogent, and they're willing to deal with cognitive dissonance. Perfect example is somebody like Sean Penn, who had been public about free speech because he didn't like the idea of anti-smoking organizations taking cigarettes out of his movies, and yet he would be partnered up with somebody like the late Hugo Chavez, dictator of Venezuela, who's another enemy of free speech, who shuts down newspapers and television stations. So there is this strange thing in Hollywood where, yes, they advocate free speech, but yet they'll hang around with thug dictators who are against free speech.
Situational ethics, for sure. So is the goal here to influence U.S. films, to make them more pro-China, or do you think it's to learn U.S. film techniques, take what they learn back to China, and then use those techniques to help influence their own culture?
I think it's a little of both, but I think China and the Chinese entertainment community wants to replace the United States as the greatest exporter of entertainment. They want to learn to make blockbusters, so-called tent poles, high-budget films, and they are learning quickly because the domestic box office, which in the beginning they had put out these horrible propaganda films that had, you know, were devoid of plot and the locals didn't like it, but they've come up with better product and their domestic box office has gone up, and the people in Hollywood are willing to just give their expertise to China. There's another irony. Here's Hollywood, which has organizations that fight for intellectual property, and here's China that, as a culture, disrespects intellectual property. So there's a lot of ironies and cognitive dissonance, but, you know, I would love to be optimistic and say that, you know, that because, you know, we've seen more freedom in places like Shanghai, that somehow the Chinese rulers, the oligarchy, would see the light and reform, but the reform is nowhere in the country. It is still a very repressive totalitarian regime with a very large Potemkin village. And if you go into the countryside, you go into the industrial areas in China, you see the real China, and it's not a pretty sight.
No, it most certainly is not. And so I think the important question here is not why are Chinese films, Chinese firms, I should say, investing in Hollywood, but rather why aren't more U.S. firms investing in film companies, especially conservatives?
Well, they are in probably the most vital and significant area where conservatives are in Christian films, faith-based films, family films, where they caught Hollywood's attention with, like, for example, a film like God's Not Dead with Kevin Sorbo, which I think grossed $70 million and cost $2 million to make. The profit margins on these films are extraordinary. So they have, but when it comes to the infrastructure of Hollywood, the major studios, you know, the Universal, the Sony, the Paramounts, and such, they're still dominated by those that are left of center. It's fully entrenched in the Hollywood community, in the social fabric. As a matter of fact, if someone is, quote, conservative, close quote, or Republican or even overtly Christian, they will suffer in terms of their career if they're starting out, and people know that right away in the community.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I would love to see more conservatives get into Hollywood, making not only films, but I'd also love to start seeing them getting involved in network TV as well. I think that's going to be another huge influence coming up here. James, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And coming up next, we'll have Kevin Freeman on to talk about some of these ongoing Chinese cyber attacks. And then there's Hillary's private email server. What kind of security risks did that cause?
Get a little intelligence on big government. You're listening to the iSpy Radio Show.
And we're back on the iSpy Radio Show. Thanks for joining us today. As every week, we help you keep an eye on big government. We just finished up with James Herson talking about the growing Chinese influence in Hollywood. But to continue our analysis and discussion about China, we're going to move away from the cultural side of things and start talking about cyber and economic warfare, a silent war that is currently ongoing, though it seems to have escaped most people's notice. But not the notice of our next guest, Kevin Freeman, who is one of the world's leading experts on the issue of economic warfare and financial terrorism. His latest book is Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack, and he's joining us now. Kevin, glad to have you on. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So let's kind of set the stage here. It seems to me we're fighting this kind of almost undeclared war. Back in March, there was a CNN article that discussed Mike McConnell, who was had served as Director of National Intelligence under George W. Bush, and he claimed that China has hacked into every major corporation in the U.S., and in that article he said, we have never, ever not found Chinese malware in looking at these major corporations. And he said that this malware lets Chinese spies extract information whenever they want. That is really shocking. Would you agree with that assessment, that the Chinese have hacked into basically every major U.S. corporation?
Well, there's no doubt that this is a Chinese methodology. It dates back to 1999 and a book written called Unrestricted Warfare, where they talked about a hacker having more influence than a nuclear weapon.
Mm.
So it's absolutely been a part of their military doctrine. We have proven without doubt that there are Chinese military groups that are dedicated solely for hacking purposes, and they've even more recently admitted that that's the case. They denied it for a long period, but they've admitted, yes, we do have superior cyber capabilities, and we will use them. So absolutely, that's correct.
Well, in that article, McConnell stated that during the final years of the Bush administration, the Chinese government employed a jaw-dropping 100,000 hackers dedicated solely to breaking into computers and stealing planning information for advanced concepts, windmills, automobiles, airplanes, spaceships, and so on. You were talking about that this is going back to 1999. Has it ever been proved conclusively that China and or Russia played a role in the U.S. market crash back in 2008?
Well, it's been proven this conclusively that the Treasury Secretary of the United States admitted publicly on a BBC radio interview that Russia tried to crash our market with the help of Chinese. The Chinese turned down the opportunity, but the Russians proceeded with an attack on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It's also been proven that it's been a part of the Russian doctrine going back to the 1950s, and it's been proven that the Chinese recently accused us of attempting to crash their stock market and threatened to retaliate. So it's all in there, yes.
Yeah, we want to talk to you about that in the next segment here. You've got a great article up on your website that discusses that very thing. In terms of hacking into major corporation, I mean, let's think about that for a minute here in terms of what that means. It means they have access not only to trade secrets, but they could also use all this insider information to make a killing in the stock market. Are we seeing any evidence of the Chinese using that information either for product development within their own country or maybe using that information that they're gaining to manipulate the investment markets, especially whether here in the U.S. or in their own markets?
The former is much easier to see. Yes, there has been intellectual property theft from American corporations going to China via hacking means. That's absolutely factual, and every major company will admit it. The second one would be much harder to prove, to see if they've been trying to manipulate their stock market as a result of their hacking. I think they would do it in a more direct fashion. The Russians, we know, hacked the NASDAQ. and the Chinese would be more likely to alter trading algorithms to force the market up and down rather than to gain information and then play the companies that were involved. They would go actually more directly through cyber means.
So what would an attack on our markets actually look like? I mean, would they get in there, and you mentioned that they hacked into NASDAQ. Would they go in there and start messing with the trades, deleting trades, maybe putting up false trades? What exactly would they do?
Well, the simplest way to do it is about 70% of our trading on any given day is done by computers only. It's high-frequency trading. It moves the markets. It is the vast majority of trading. The easiest thing to do would be to alter the trading algorithms or to spoof the trading algorithms in some way to cause Goldman Sachs to trade on information that wasn't true, and the net result is Goldman Sachs would move the market. They would get the blame if there was a problem. And we've seen that happen, not with China, but the Syrian Electronic Army a couple of years ago actually sent out a false tweet that says the White House has been hit, the president's hurt. And high-frequency traders immediately responded because the algorithm picked up, this is bad, therefore sell stocks. And the Dow dropped about $200 billion in value for a brief period. China could do something far more sophisticated, but the result would be the same. They could cause us to create our own market panic, and we wouldn't necessarily realize it until maybe months, if not years later, that they were involved, if we ever learned they were involved.
And then in the meantime, all that chaos, pretty scary stuff, really. All right, so let's take a break right here. Coming up in the next segment, we'll talk about why this is happening. The Chinese believe we're attacking them. Are we? And welcome back. It's all about China today, their growing influence in Hollywood, and also their silent war with us through cyber terrorism and economic warfare. If you're just joining us, in the last segment, we discussed the attacks by China on U.S. companies and on our markets. We're talking today with Kevin Freeman, one of the world's leading authorities on economic warfare and financial terrorism. His website, with tons of great articles on this and other related issues, is globaleconomicwarfare.com. So let's talk about why this is happening. You have an article up on that website. China believes we crashed their market as an act of economic warfare. So they're thinking that we're already attacking them, and so the attacks on the U.S., are those in retaliation? Are those preemptive strikes? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that the fact that they're accusing us is pretty obvious evidence that they're thinking along these lines and likely have already either planned or executed attacks against us in the same area. I do not believe that America in any way crashed the Chinese stock market. It was up well over 100% in a few months' time, and for it to drop as it's dropped is very normal for bubble behavior, like we saw with the NASDAQ, as you saw in the 1929 crash, and so forth. However, they believe we were involved. And if they believe we were involved, that's indicative that they have already been thinking along these lines. And we know that's the case because that 1999 book, Unrestricted Warfare, that I referenced earlier, said a single man-made stock market crash is a powerful new concept weapon. And they really believe that it could be used to attack them. They're very concerned because they're trying to internationalize the renminbi, their currency. They want it to be a part of the special drawing rights of the International Monetary Fund, the IMF. They're coming out with a new grouping of currencies that make the special drawing rights this September, and they want their currency to be front and center in that mix. It has not been, and they believe that the United States has attacked them to discredit their stock market in order to keep the dollar front and center as the reserve currency of the world.
Well, I know that for a while there, they were trying to push it out, push the U.S. dollar out of that role. In terms of China blaming us, that just seems really typical of communism, where you have to blame someone else because you never, ever want to look at the failure of your own economic policies. But in terms of China blaming us, do they have any evidence of us being involved? And to be specific, are they accusing the U.S. government of doing this or simply rogue American hackers doing this?
Well, I doubt that they have any evidence because I don't believe it's taking place. What they undoubtedly do have, however, are obvious evidences that the NSA has been monitoring communication activity around the world, which is different than crashing a market. But to them, it's spying, and there's no doubt they'll have evidence of that. But you're exactly right. Their economy has been a bubble. It is over-leveraged. Their debt problems make our debt problems look like nothing. They've overbuilt to where there are these empty skyscrapers and really,
yes,
truly empty cities.
Yeah.
And they've loaned money at irrational rates and to people who couldn't afford. I mean, it's our housing crisis times 100. And so it is inevitable that there's going to be an economic tumult. The problem is how they respond to the economic tumult. A wounded dragon is something to be feared.
Yes. Yeah, and that's great points. And within that article there, you talk about how the Chinese hold the mindset that if you don't believe that the U.S. Has been hacking into our systems, you're essentially a traitor. That's really kind of shocking. But that seems to be their official governmental position on this.
Well, the government's got to have that position, because if they don't have a scapegoat or someone to blame, the Chinese people may blame them. And keep in mind that there is a very strong People's Liberation Army, PLA, element in there that is trying to justify an antagonistic position against the United States, whereas the business community has wants the best possible relations with America. The military community needs to justify with a scapegoat the enemy of America in order to further cement their power in China.
Yeah, in that article, you've got 12 really interesting points, and just to kind of sum up maybe the first 10 or so, you're saying that this is theoretically possible, that we could have hacked into their system, and then secondly, they are at least publicly saying that the U.S. did this, but the real key, though, is that as a result of this belief, you believe that they may in fact feel the need to retaliate, and if so, Russia will join them. Can you address that?
Yeah, they've been very clear that that this is an economic war. They will retaliate. I mean, they've made that very plain that they intend to retaliate in some way. And so the same thing with sanctions. We put on additional sanctions on Russia, and Russia says we will retaliate. And so what we've witnessed in the world the past several years is Russia and China have set up the systems necessary to continue to function as economies, even if the U.S. were gone. So they've created their alternative to the International Monetary Fund. They've created their alternative to the SWIFT trading system. They've created their alternative to the World Bank. Now, whether they can succeed or not is a separate question, but they are clearly putting their money where their mouth is. They're building up the infrastructure necessary for the world and for their economies to function with a severely diminished American role, or an outright removal of the American role, including the dollar.
Wow. Wow, shocking stuff. All right, let's go ahead and take a break right there. When we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit more about this idea that China will retaliate, and also get your thoughts on that rival to the World Bank they've set up. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Kevin Freeman. He's one of the world's leading experts on the issues of economic warfare and financial terrorism. And in the last segment there, we were talking about the idea that China will retaliate for what they believe to be attacks by the U.S. on their market systems. So what exactly would that look like, you think, in terms of China retaliating? And one of the questions that I have on... Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe we were losing again. So in terms of what that would look like... I'm curious if you think that they would somehow involve an organization like ISIS or some of these other groups that they know that we're at war at, because then they could essentially hand them the tools to do it, but the blame would fall on them rather than on China. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's possible if they did a physical retaliation, but they have so much data from the Office of Personnel Management hack. They know so many things that they could just release a series of scandals that would keep our government tied up. They could dump information on the Attorney General, or dump information on admiral or political figure. And by doing so, just by releasing it Edward Snowden style or through WikiLeaks, they could really embarrass our nation. And that sort of retaliation is something I think they're very prone to do.
You also mentioned in the last segment there about the rival to the World Bank that China is trying to set up. This is a $50 billion bank, the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. So what exactly do they hope to be doing with this in terms of bringing it out as a rival to the World Bank? And isn't competition a good thing?
Actually, what they said in the year, I think it was 2013, they said, we must de-Americanize the world. And so what they did was they put up a competitor that we said, no, Britain, France, Germany, don't join that. Australia, don't join that. They all joined it. Mm-hmm. They all sided with China in that respect. Now, is competition a good thing? Actually, it is if it's benign. My fear is that the purpose of all of this is to de-Americanize the world, as they said in 2013. And the reason people will all the time say, well, China would never hurt us because they'd have too much to lose. And that was true at one point. It's becoming less true every single day. They're de-Americanizing China and they're encouraging others to join them. So at some point, there'll be a tipping point. I don't think we're there yet, but where China feels that looking out 30, 50, 100 years, they're better off without a United States than with a United States. And that's when we've got to be very concerned.
Well, I think one of the things that's confusing for people here is that we've got this silent warfare happening in the background, these attacks on U.S. corporations, and I think people kind of understand that because that's, you know, business espionage, so to speak, and that's been going on for years. But at the same time, what's odd is that we seem to be continuing a more or less normal business relationship with the Chinese. In our opening segments there with James Hurston, we talked about how China is investing heavily in the film industry. Just as one example here, but if they believe that we're attacking them and we believe that they're attacking us, how can we ever have any kind of relationship with them? I mean, Sun Tzu, of course, said that all warfare is based on deception. So is this all just a part of a larger war strategy, keeping up the appearance of normalcy while waiting for an opening to attack? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. And it's also part of an Islamic style strategy built on the idea of Muhammad. You sign a 10-year agreement with them, and then 2 years later you attack them. So I think it is deception, and I think it is, but there are sincere elements in China. There's a growing Christian church in China that's growing in influence on a regular basis, and the government's trying to clamp down on them. Then there's the business community that wants to have a peaceful world and let China succeed because we win at business. My fear is that there are rogue elements in the PLA, actually maybe not rogue elements, maybe they're the mainstream elements in the PLA, combining with rogue elements in the Communist Party that want China to take a dominant position in the world. It's called the China Dream, that they can reassert themselves to be the most powerful nation on the planet as they were for centuries prior.
Well, but in terms of the average person listening, what does it mean for them if China were to do that in terms of taking over the top economic power? I mean, why is that inherently bad?
Well, it wouldn't be inherently bad if it were intended to earn that position. And again, those would be the positive elements in China that I'd like to work with. Sure, compete, win, be the strongest economy on earth. We'll all benefit from that. I'm all in favor of that. It's the element of the People's Liberation Army that wants to look for the opportunity of weakness to sign the 10-year deal and then stab us in the back in the middle of it. That's what I'm concerned about.
Well, how do you address then this, and you kind of touched on it earlier, how do you address this that they wouldn't necessarily want to attack us because we're their best customer? So where is their logic in that if they were to set out to destroy us?
Well, again, this is where it's important to not look at a monolithic China. If China were a monolith, then you could make the argument that it's in their interest to maintain a strong United States. And that argument is being made by the business community and some in the government. The problem is that you also have a military group that feels that it's necessary to put China at the top of the ladder. So they have 2 5-year programs. They're always looking out 5 years. There's the 5-year military strategy and the 5-year economic strategy.
Yeah.
And so the concern is that there, you know, it wasn't in Germany's best interest to attack France and the United Kingdom and the United States. What, you know, they should have rebuilt their economy too. That would have been better for them. Just looking back historically, that was a bad move, starting war. But you have these warlike elements, and those warlike elements are now focused on cyber economic warfare. They've learned these new techniques, and they can do it and get away with it without the severe retaliation that might happen if they, for example, invaded another country.
Yeah, and it always does come down to that notion of control. All right, let's go ahead and take a break right here. Everyone stay with us. When we come back, we'll be talking about the Hillary email scandal and whether or not this is exposing the U.S. to additional hacking. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today about China and the silent war being waged right now. China thinks that we're attacking them, although there's no evidence of that, but it's clear that we're being attacked by China. And to do all that, we're talking with Kevin Freeman. He's one of the world's leading experts on the issues of economic warfare and financial terrorism. His website is globaleconomicwarfare.com if you'd like to go visit that. And, of course, we'll link all of that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. So back in July 2015 here, there was a New York Times article in which President Obama said that the U.S. must retaliate for the theft of 20 million American personnel database information. So are you hearing any kind of information about what that retaliation would look like?
Well, it's been discussed as that's a license to hack back. And that it might provide, and that's not actually an unconstitutional or foreign concept to the United States. Remember when we had pirates, we'd sure. give letters of marque, and you'd say you can go back and steal from the pirates what they took. That's in the Constitution, so Congress could grant that power. So they talk about hacking back. I suspect, however, that President Obama is talking about a top-down military response using our cyber command, which unfortunately is going to be much harder than you know. Clearly we have superior cyber skills, but we have not been able to recruit a large number of cyber personnel to the cyber command. There was one request for 10,000 people, and we got 3,000 to sign up. And I think you quoted earlier a statistic. There's well over 100,000 hackers employed by the Chinese military.
Yeah.
So we're at a severe disadvantage in the free market. We can't order you. You're drafted. Go in and hack. So it will be a much more difficult, tall order for us to level that playing field if they're acting in a subversive fashion.
You mentioned that we're having trouble recruiting them. Why is that? Are they not available, or is there some other issue in terms of adding more, I guess, U.S. hackers?
Well, when you're going to hire a foot soldier or someone, you can offer what is basically a competitive salary to a lot of other positions. And we realize there's a sacrifice from our military men and women to join. But if you've got superior cyber skills, the highest end, the demand for that is so great that if you have the opportunity to go work for a corporation, you can get paid a much larger salary than the government offers to military personnel.
So it
becomes, and there's not that bravado. You grow up and you know, you play football, you're physically very involved, very strong. You think, I want to be a part of the United States military. Well, the typical prototypical hacker doesn't necessarily think in those terms about join the army.
Well, let's turn the discussion here to Hillary, because I think her email issue and the fact that she was using a private server kind of encapsulates a lot of what we're talking about here. Because are there inherent differences between using a private server like what she did versus using the government system? For example, I assume government email bounces from one government server to the next government server. But by using a private server, it essentially goes from a government server to not just her own private server, but I think multiple other servers along the way, does it not?
Yes. There's a substantive difference between using a private server and using a government server. One is in security and how you can secure it. And it's interesting that the response that she gave regarding security was, but my server was guarded by the Secret Service. Well, yes, physically, you could not access her server readily because there were Secret Service personnel at her home where the server was located. But that's not the question.
Yeah.
The question was, did they have the highest standards? Now, there's good news and bad news. It's possible that she could have had a private server with much higher security on it, much greater potential and protection than the U.S. government. I don't see any evidence that that's the case. The U.S. government servers are obviously subject to intrusion, and we saw that with the Office of Personnel Management, the Navy and Marine Corps databases, the White House, the State Department. You start listing all the different places that have been hacked. So she could have had a higher degree of security. It's doubtful, though, and she's given no evidence, and especially when she answers, well, Secret Service personnel were physically present.
Yeah, and I'm not hearing anything that assuages any of my fears here in terms of higher security. So just so that people understand, essentially what we're saying is that when you send an email within the government, it all sort of stays behind the walls of the castle, so to speak. Whereas if she's using a private server, the email hops from behind that castle walls to multiple private servers before it finally arrives at hers. So in essence, it's kind of like sending a messenger from one castle to the next, but the messenger stops at every tavern along the way. So does that mean that each of those private servers, the Chinese hackers or Russian or whoever, could have actually intercepted any of those emails? Is that correct?
Absolutely. They could have been sniffed any number of ways. And then they were forwarded to her BlackBerry, and then she claimed, you know, this is just an absolute mess. And then you have the issue of, what if it wasn't just Chinese hackers? What if she was doing something, deleting email that need to be recorded or kept?
Telling
you, you look at people in a lot of different industries that are sensitive, regulated industries, they're required to keep copies of everything that's done. The only way that we know that the emails that she deleted were private and personal is because she told us they were private and personal.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. So she's also saying that she used this security firm based in Denver, and using this Denver firm itself raises some issues. My astute producer said that, well, have that Denver security firm, did anybody do a background check on them? For all we know, this is a terrorist group or something like that. Obviously, it's probably not. But, I mean, it's that kind of sense that she's exposed us to. Is did that group itself go through any kind of background check? And do you know anything about that organization?
They could have been the most perfect, wonderful organization on the planet. Kaspersky Labs, which is a very sophisticated internet security firm out of Russia, has been hacked. It doesn't matter how sophisticated. You multiply the risk because you already have the risk of everything that went to her on the government server. So that's one risk. Now we've doubled the risk because it's gone to a private servers, and then we've tripled the risk if it's gone through a third-party security.
Wow.
So every point creates another point of access and another point of risk. So it gives an additional opportunity, not just for China, but anyone the State Department is dealing with, including our allies, to keep on top of what we're talking about.
Ugly. Yeah. Would you, since she's sending that through all those different servers, if it was hacked, could some kind of code be attached to her emails to then make it easier for a hacker to gain access to government servers?
Oh, absolutely. When she sends an email with an attachment in it, it could be the open Pandora's box. It could be the open door that releases everything in the government. And that's essentially how the OPM hack happened. It happened because of poor cyber hygiene and from someone on the outside.
Wow. You know, it just gives you goosebumps to think what she's done here.
The idea that she could get away with it, a financial advisor who is required to keep 100% of their emails deleted, 30,000, they go to jail for that. And that's a regulated industry, not a government employee.
Wow. Absolutely stunning. Kevin Freeman, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. It is time for us to get going. But before we do, one quick correction. I have been given Kevin's website as Global Economic Warfare. That's actually his blog. His website is secretweapon.org, secretweapon.org. Be sure to go take a look at that and also check out the links there at iSpyRadio.com because, as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.